Good morning, everybody. I'm sure we can settle down so that we start with our meeting. People were invited for tea. I'm sure we all had tea. We'll welcome everybody who's in the room, especially our presenters who are joining us today. Today we are dealing with public hearings on the Immigration Amendment Bill. And in terms of our agenda, the first presenters are Peninsula Immigration, and they are here ready to make their presentation. It's your opportunity. Introduce yourself and tell us who you are, and then continue with the presentation. Over to you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rafiq Friday. I'm from Peninsula Immigration. I'm here to represent our company as well as our interests as South African citizens. The South African Immigration Act should be designed to protect South Africa and its citizens. The Immigration Act in its present form does not fulfill this obligation. It is for this reason that changes should be made, not only to the Immigration Act, but to the immigration regulation as well, in the interest of South Africa and its citizens. In order to do this, the immigration regulation, in conjunction with the Immigration Act, must be revised and amended accordingly. Presently, South Africa is being flooded with foreign nationals, which in turn strains our communities, our social development, public health care facilities, etc., which is funded by the taxpayer. For many foreigners, obtaining a South African ID and passport is just a stepping stone to greener pastures because of the status our passports hold internationally. It is important that South Africa takes control of its borders and manages the foreigners who are here already. It is imperative that the amendments made must be strictly applied and enforced by the Department of Home Affairs Immigration Department to be fully effective. However, any concessions or exemptions should be applied for via an Office of Application and only be granted by the Minister or the Director General. Foreigners who have been granted a visitor's permit for the purpose of visiting family, holiday, meetings, conference, tourism purposes, etc., should not be allowed to apply for any other permit other than an extension. Too many foreigners enter South Africa as holiday makers, visitors, and tourists with ulterior motives, that is, to seek employment. I find it quite fascinating to find that a foreigner enters South Africa with a purpose, for the purpose of leisure, holiday purposes, and within 30 days has secured himself a job and is now applying for a work permit. There are many other different scenarios that could be mentioned. Any foreigner who wishes to get married or enter into a life partnership agreement with a South African citizen should produce proof that he or she is not married in the country of origin or any other country where he or she has been resident in excess of 6 months. Such a foreigner shall provide police clearance from each country where he or she has been resident longer than 6 months. Too many foreigners get married, enter into relationships or partnerships while being married and having a family abroad, which they are still currently supporting. A foreigner who is the biological parent of a child born from a relationship between him or herself and a South African citizen must share the responsibilities of such financial contribution and emotional support. The foreigner will also be held accountable to all such responsibilities. In many cases, only the South African citizen carries the responsibilities, which has a rippling effect on our social grant system funded by the taxpayer, while the foreigner is allowed a permit which enables him to work and support his family abroad. A foreigner who holds a relative permit or a life partnership permit should only be eligible for permanent residence after 10 consecutive years of being on such a permit, subject to the conditions set out in the permanent residence category. In terms of Section 11(6), where a foreigner who is to accompany his South African spouse or life partner with a condition to conduct business, such a foreigner must provide proof of business registration, at least business registration, and at least 5 South African citizens is to be employed within the first 2 years of issuance of such a permit, subject to the nature and size of the business. And at least 3 of the 5 South African citizens should be in a supervisory or managerial position. Such a foreigner who holds the aforementioned permit will only be eligible for permanent residence after 10 consecutive years of being a holder of such a permit, subject to the terms and conditions set out in the permanent residence category. Why should a foreigner only employ South African citizens as cleaners and the rest of his staff is of his own nationality? This is what is currently happening. In terms of Section 11(6), where a foreigner is to accompany his or her South African spouse to take up employment, should be subjected to the terms and conditions set out in the work permit category. Such a foreigner who is a holder of such a permit will only be eligible for permanent residence after 10 consecutive years of being a holder of the aforementioned permit, subject to the terms and conditions set out in the permanent residence category. Excuse me. A foreigner who is a work permit holder will only be eligible for permanent residence after being a holder of such a permit for 10 consecutive years, regardless of his position held or his employee. Such a foreigner will comply with the terms and conditions set out in the permanent residence category. A cap or a quota should also be placed on the amount of work permits issued and granted to foreign nationals. Work permits should be issued to the employer or the company who should be held accountable for such a permit with hefty fines for non-compliance. Business permit holders must employ within the first 2 years of issuance of such a permit at least 10 South African citizens or permanent resident holders, or at least 80% of his or her staff complement should be South African citizens or permanent resident holders, which should include at least 5 South Africans in a managerial or supervisory position, whichever is greater, subject to the nature and size of his or her business. The business permit holder will also only be eligible for permanent residence after 10 consecutive years of operating his or her business successfully, subject to the terms and conditions set out in the permanent residence category. As I have mentioned before, South African citizens are usually in the lowest positions in these businesses. They are also the lowest in numbers and not being uplifted or developed, as opposed to the rest of the staff complement, which are all foreigners in higher positions and ranking. Study permits. A cap should also be placed on the amount of study permits granted. Let us educate ourselves and our children before attempting to educate the rest of the world. Too many foreigners or foreign students are taking up valuable space of South African citizens in schools, primary schools, secondary schools, universities and colleges, etc. This is a reality that each of us as South African citizens face year in and year out. Let's limit the amount of study permits granted and allow ourselves and our children the opportunity to be educated. With regards to citizenship, no foreigner should be granted citizenship. Citizenship is a birthright and cannot be applied for. Permanent residence should only be applied for after 10 consecutive years of being on the respective permits. in terms of Section 26D of the Principal Act, should be deleted, as it is in direct conflict with Section 26C of the Principal Act, which refers to a foreigner under the age of 21 who is a son or daughter of a citizen, and Section 26D only refers to the child of a citizen. Section 27G of the Principal Act should be amended to: is a relative of a citizen or permanent resident within the first step of kinship, subject to the citizen or permanent resident not being a minor or under the age of 21. This means a foreigner cannot claim permanent residence based on his or her child while such a minor or child is a minor. Many foreigners father children with the sole purpose of gaining permanent residence, and in many cases does not support these children's needs or share the responsibility withdrawal of permanent residence in terms of Section 28A should be amended to: if at any time of issuance of such a permit has been convicted of any of the offences listed in Schedule 1 and 2, meaning should a permanent residence holder be convicted of any of the listed offences listed in Schedule 1 and 2, he or she will do the jail time and be deported. Prohibited persons, Section 29, which refers to any foreigner who does not qualify for temporary residence or permanent residence. Section 29, paragraph 1, subsection G should be added as: anyone at any time who has overstayed, meaning any person entering the country on a visitor's permit who has overstayed becomes a prohibited person. Section 46 of the Principal Act refers to practitioners and attorneys. In terms of the South African Constitution, everyone has a right to representation. However, the removal of Section 46 does not prevent any practitioner or attorney to represent a foreigner. It is, however, in the interest of Home Affairs to uphold and enforce Section 46 as to regulate such practices to prevent dodgy, unregistered practitioners from practicing illegally, leaving their clients without recourse. Furthermore, practitioners and attorneys are acting indirectly as consultants, alleviating some of the strain from the Immigration Department. The removal of Section 46 will lead to job losses and the closing down of many immigration practices, leading to further unemployment. That concludes my representation for this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Freddy Rafik.
Yeah, thank you.
Honourable members, time for questions and comments. We've heard the presenter from Cape Peninsula Immigration. He's touched on a number of clauses. You are afforded the time to post questions. Honourable Marcella.
Thank you, Sebastian. This is a very favourite subject to me, given the circumstances that this country has found itself under. We are a country that is determined to grow its economy. And of course, doing so, you need strong, skilled personnel. You need investment. You need that the government recognizes that there is a number of things that we can learn from other people who hail elsewhere in the land. Now, the best way to do that is to recognize the challenges that we confront as a nation. And that is, there's nothing that we can do on our own without the help of others. As I've mentioned earlier, that given the kind of skill shortages, and of course, the fact that the majority of South Africans are not only illiterate, but they never had access to basic schooling. Now, you'll find that many of the foreigners who find themselves in our country, who have skills, have in fact schooled themselves where they come from. And those who then study in this country, it is in our best interest to allow them to do so. But I do believe that in terms of the migration policy, we all hold different views and thoughts, and of course we have reasons why we hold those views. But having listened to the presenter, one would easily make a conclusion that say you do not want foreigners to come to South Africa. And you do not recognize the value that they add to the economy. And that would support a quota that forbids people to come and join forces with the South African society in order to recognize those other areas that I've mentioned earlier. But I don't want to believe that that is the case. And I'm sure, given the challenges, and I'm hoping that you've really taken note of your last remark, Section 46 of the Principal Act, which I support you fully on that. But now, how do you practice, or say, to immigration practitioners, they must practice if you don't want foreigners to come here? Who are they going to help? So I think the very strong view here, which I got from you, is that we probably need to find means and ways to make this immigration segment of our policy work better, so that everybody that somehow finds themselves in the country is not seen as an alien or as the other, but is seen as being part of the society. And it's a problem that we're actually confronted with, Honorable Chairperson. Hence where the xenophobic violence in 2008. And of course, one may argue, why do we have that kind of a violence in a country like ours? It's because of some of the stereotypes that we find in the communities, where people have this and this to say about the other. And I don't want to believe that you are here to represent those people that have been saying the things that were so ugly to our ears. And I would like to really hear your views and comments on my remarks. And this is a public submission process, and I don't want to bash anyone, but I'm seeking more information, because this is an opportunity to help us craft this immigration act in the manner that we assist South African society. Thank you very much.
We will take a few questions and then you will respond at the end. Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague has really covered my concerns and the questions that I would have had. We believe very strongly in the creation of opportunity for South Africans, and we believe that foreigners can contribute that. Your presentation was very contrary to that belief. And like my colleague, I would be very interested to know what underpins your thinking. Why do you feel so strongly, for instance, the 10 years, the children, the non-changing of permits, all of these things which would be discouraging to foreigners. Why? What makes you feel so strongly about that? And then, Chair, just two very specific things. there was mention of a child who would be born of a foreigner, and these social responsibilities, I don't believe that that would form part, unless the presenter can inform us otherwise, of the Immigration Act. That's a social issue, and I don't believe that Home Affairs, it falls within the Department of Home Affairs mandate, things like social grants going to foreigners' children, etc. And then the amendment of Section 29, where you wish to make it an offence to overstay. Anyone who has at any time overstayed. I have in my inbox at the moment emails from many people who are desperate because they are overstaying, but it is because of the tardiness of the Department of Home Affairs and in processing their applications for extensions. Would those people fall within this ambit? Why is it so very severe? Is really what I'm trying to get from the presenter. Thank you, Chair. That is it. May I respond?
Thank you. With regards to the 10 years, if you enter into a marriage or a life partnership, basically your intention is, listen, I'm in it for life. Whether it's 2 years, whether it is 10 years or 5 years, shouldn't matter. The purpose and the reasoning behind 10 years is to discourage anyone who has ulterior motives other than a good spousal relationship. With regards to social grants, now, if a foreign national and a South African citizen gets together, a child is born, who takes responsibility for that child? Yes, it may not be the Department of Home Affairs' problem, but at the end of the day, it becomes everyone's problem. Who's taking responsibility for that child financially, emotionally? Tomorrow that child ends up on the street, breaks into your house, you want to know why. Foreign national walks away, he's got his permit, he's working, the wife is somewhere he doesn't know, the child is somewhere he doesn't care, he's working and he is supporting his family abroad. As ugly as the picture has been painted, this is the reality out there. If anyone overstays intentionally, they need to bear the consequences because they do not have respect for our rules or our regulations. Our rules need to be adhered to in full, and those that have disregarded our rules and our laws should be punished for that. I would have suggested a 2-year exclusion from the country, but that will just make things a bit easier of entering again. So that could be looked at, I admit there, but I also am of the opinion that our rules and our regulations should be addressed hard and fast. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any hands. I think we can go to the next presentation. And that will be done by Consortium for Refugees and Migration in South Africa. Okay.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Mr. Rafiq, can you switch off your mic, please?
Thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you today. My name is Gail Eddy, and I'm from the Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa, or CORMSA. They're a national network of organizations working with refugees and migrants in South Africa. CORMSA members include research institutes, law clinics, direct service providers, and migrant and refugee communities who have various expertise on migration issues. CORMSA welcomes the opportunity to make the submission on the Immigration Amendment Bill to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. The submission highlights some of the issues that are critical in addressing the immigration needs of the country, as well as specific provisions that the bill aims to amend. In the presentation by the Department of Home Affairs to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs on the 16th of November 2010, it is stated that South Africa, being part of the global village, manages the movement of people who travel for the following reasons. Investing their financial resources in the economy, contributing to social and cultural development, investing their skills and experience in order to promote economic growth, promoting tourism, and facilitating academic exchanges within SADC. It is worth noting that the categories left out of this definition are refugees, asylum seekers, and economic migrants, who represent a large number of people migrating to South Africa. This reflects South Africa's policy of aiming to attract highly skilled workers, but provides few means of low-skilled immigrants or those without sufficient resources or passports to legalize their entry and stay in the country. The fact that these categories of migrants were left out points to a trend that, instead of constructively dealing with the reality of migration, seeks to restrict migration and impose increasingly punitive penalties on those who contravene legislation. The reality is that stopping the migration of refugees, asylum seekers, and economic migrants to South Africa is not possible. Despite the punitive measures that this legislation proposes, refugees, asylum seekers, and economic migrants will continue to come to South Africa. Migration is a reality. However, if managed properly, migration can lead to investment, job creation, and a more productive economy, while also negating the risks of having a segment of the population that is marginalized and outside of social and legal protection. Of serious concern is the fact that the Immigration Amendment Bill seeks to deal with the symptoms rather than the problem itself. This will continue to happen until South Africa develops a clear and informed migration policy that addresses how migration will be managed in the long term. Unfortunately, this legislation has no such domestic policy to guide it, and therefore is reactive to the situation. There is, however, policy guidance in the SADC Protocol on the Facilitation of the Movement of Persons, which has the overall objective to develop policies aimed at the progressive elimination of obstacles to the movement of persons of the region, generally into and within the territories of state parties. This protocol notes that interdependence and integration of national economies for harmonious, balanced, and equitable development of the region is only possible where citizens of the community enjoy freedom of movement of persons. It further notes that the African Union is encouraging free movement of persons in African regional economic communities as a stepping stone towards the free movement of persons in an eventual African economic community. CORMSA thus recommends that any future migration policy should focus on the efficient import of skills, rights-based management of asylum seekers and refugees, management of economic immigration that promotes national and regional development, management of a variety of risks associated with different policy options, and ensuring effective and distinct macro and micro-level refugee and migration management. Moving on to comments on the specific sections of the Immigration Bill. In Clause 5 of the Bill, it now requires minors to have their own passports, as it is said that this would help prevent child trafficking. However, research has shown that the extent of child trafficking in South Africa is not as widespread as previously thought. Human smuggling is a much larger problem, which children often find themselves a victim of. Having a passport would not combat this problem. Another issue is that of unaccompanied minors. It would be very difficult for unaccompanied minors to get access to a passport, and thus they would face illegal deportation on this basis. This is despite South Africa having a well-developed legal and policy framework for securing the rights of migrant children regardless of their documentation. CORMSA thus recommends the following: that clear provisions be made on how children, particularly unaccompanied minors, would be assisted in getting appropriate documentation to ensure their protection. These provisions should also clearly define the roles for each department in dealing with these categories of children. For example, the Department of Home Affairs, Social Development, and Justice. Clause 7C of the Bill makes the amendment to Section 10B in the Act that foreigners will no longer be allowed to change his or her status while in South Africa, except under exceptional circumstances. We recommend that clear indications be made in the regulations on how this application should be made and the conditions associated with it. Clause 11 proposes that Section 15 of the Act is amended to specify that the business foreigner wishes to establish must be prescribed to be in the national interest. The bill does not provide a definition of national interest. Noting the high unemployment rates in the country and the possibilities of creating employment offered by immigrants who set up businesses, COMSA recommends that a definition of what is prescribed to be in the national interest be included in the definition section of the bill. This will assist in preventing arbitrary decisions being made when applications for a business visa are being made. Clause 12D proposes the creation of a critical skills permit for those who have exceptional skills that are needed in South Africa. Professional and highly skilled migrants in South Africa are underemployed. In fact, the underemployment rate of skilled migrants is 6% higher than that of the unskilled counterpart, which suggests that South Africa is not yet making the most of this pool of skilled workers. COMSA therefore welcomes the creation of this category of permits. However, there are often problems in the registration and recognition of qualifications by various departments, such as the Department of Health and the Department of Education. If these barriers are not removed, difficulties will remain for migrants applying for this permit. We thus recommend that coordination among relevant departments be intensified to ensure that barriers to applying for these permits are removed and that the various policy and legislative frameworks are compatible and not contradictory. Clause 15 amends the validity period of the asylum transit permit from 14 days to 5 days for reporting to the nearest refugee reception office. It also provides for a procedure for establishing whether or not such a person qualifies for making an application for asylum. Decreasing the validity period of the asylum transit permit will make it increasingly difficult for asylum seekers to get access to refugee reception offices, and this will make them vulnerable to arrest and deportation. The provision for a procedure for establishing whether or not a person qualifies for an application for asylum, which would be decided at a port of entry, is problematic. This would leave the decision of whether a person qualifies for asylum in the hands of someone who would not necessarily have the expertise to handle such a claim. This could lead to those who have valid claims being rejected and deported without receiving a proper hearing. It could also lead to increasing delays at border posts, as a screening would have to take place here first. COMSA thus recommends the following: that the validity of the asylum transit permit be retained at 14 days, and asylum seekers be allowed to proceed to the nearest refugee reception office to apply for asylum without being prejudiced and facing refoulement, which would be in violation of both domestic and international law. Clause 18 once again states that the business foreigner intends to establish or has established in South Africa be prescribed to be in the national interest. As noted above, COMSA recommends that a clear definition of prescribed to be in the national interest be provided in the definition section. Clause 24 contains drastic increases in punishment for various offences. The increased punitive nature of the proposed Immigration Amendment Bill is problematic in that the system itself is often unable to properly process individuals, and thus many are exposed to criminalisation as a result of the inefficiencies in the system. For example, asylum seekers are often arrested on their way home from a day of queuing unsuccessfully outside of a refugee reception office. COMSA recommends that the length of punishments be reviewed and in some cases be reduced depending on the severity of the offence. Additional recommendations. Section 39 of the Principal Act states that no learning institution may knowingly provide training or instruction to an illegal foreigner, and thus entrenches the idea that access to training or instruction is subject to a non-national's immigration status. This section is not under review in the current bill, however, COMSA believes it necessitates mentioning in the submission. This provision is in direct contrast to the provisions in the South African Schools Act and the Constitution, which grant the right to universal basic education. COMSA thus recommends that this section be explicit to indicate that learners enrolled for basic education should not be denied access. This is particularly important as the South African Schools Act gives the grace period for undocumented learners to acquire the relevant documentation from the Department of Home Affairs to continue their enrollment in school. We appreciate the opportunity to make this submission to the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, COMSA. An opportunity for members to ask questions and comment. Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, I have a few questions. Much reference was made in the introduction to economic migrants, basically coming in via the asylum seeker system. But from what I can see, there are no definite recommendations on how to deal with it. This amendment doesn't deal with it. And I would be interested in your views, in the presenter's views, on how you think that should be dealt with. And then three areas where I want to ask you if you are satisfied with what is in the bill. You talk about the amendment saying that foreigners will no longer be able to change their status whilst in South Africa except under exceptional circumstances, and you request that clear indications be made in regulations. Are you in fact satisfied with this amendment? You also mentioned the creation of a critical skills permit, and you say that coordination amongst relevant departments will need to be intensified, etc. Again, are you satisfied that there should exist a list of critical skills? Are you happy with that section of the amendment bill? And then lastly, the the national interest. Businesses prescribed to be in the national interest. You say that you would like a definition of what is prescribed to be in the national interest. This is another list similar to the quota list. My personal or our concern is, for instance, the quota. The quotas have not been published last year. They are way out of date. We don't have doctors and nurses on the quota list, but you know that. So are you happy that we will now have a list of national interests, businesses in the national interest, we will now have a list of critical skills, etc., rather than just accepting it and saying, well, there must be the proper consultation? Thank you, Chair.
On that same point, I, you know, sometimes when you start defining concepts like national interest or so, then you are actually narrowing it down instead of allowing the courts to interpret it. Wouldn't you see that as a possible risk, and shouldn't we leave it to the courts to interpret? Or otherwise, do you have a different concept that you would find more acceptable than national interest? Thanks.
You've mentioned that there are barriers, I'm sure, in the Department of Health and Education that are a bit of a problem. Can you maybe elaborate further as to reference to barriers? What do you mean by barriers? Can you respond to the questions?
Thank you very much for the question. Dealing with the first issue of the issue of economic migrants, we do deal a lot with this in the submission, but I think the issue here is that we don't have a long-term policy, and I think this is particularly problematic with this issue, because if we're not trying to ascertain how we deal with, for example, regional issues that lead to economic migration, as well as which would involve kind of international relations issues, as well as dealing with a long-term projection, it's very difficult for this Immigration Act to actually deal effectively with the issue of economic migrants. So that's why this hasn't been explicitly stated here, because this is a policy issue as well, and if we don't have an effective policy to deal with the Act, then it's going to be problematic. Moving on to the amendment to changing statuses, we ask here that yeah, the basically clear indications be made on how this application will be made and the conditions attached. Ultimately, this is going to be make life increasingly difficult for a lot of asylum seekers, refugees, to change their statuses. And this could possibly be something that we would maybe like to actually be taken out, but we would have to discuss that further. Looking at the critical skills permit, I think the creation of the critical skills permit is welcome because it will hopefully make it easier for people with skills to gain access to it. And here we're specifically talking about people like nurses or radiographers, educators, engineers. We see, for example, with the engineering board, there's a delay of between 12 to 18 months for some immigrants who have engineering qualifications. So hopefully by listing critical skills, we'll make it the process easier for these people to be part of the economy. Looking at the issue of national interests, we asked for there to be a drawn a list, and I take that question that it would probably be best to let the courts decide that, and it actually may even be better to leave that section out. I think it's a section it's something that's up for interpretation, and it's not necessarily helpful in terms of showing what kind of businesses would be set up or not. And then dealing with the issues of the difficulties in other departments of health and education, we see that with registration with councils such as the South African Educators Council can be really delayed for up to over a year. So you have people, simply because there's so many applications coming in, as well as the inability of councils to process these people. So you're seeing a hold up at the council level in terms of the various Department of Health, that nurses getting registered. So there's hold-ups within the councils themselves to accredit people to be able to practice. So that's something that's quite problematic within those departments.
Honourable Matula.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say something on Clause 5, which indicated that no person shall enter or depart from the Republic unless he or she is in possession of a valid passport. Well, clearly, I'm of the opinion that I actually regarded that as a regulation, as much as or similar to the recommendation made that the Act need to come up clear on the regulation of foreigners that will no longer be allowed to change his or her status while in South Africa. But taking into account on the comments made by the presenter regarding minors. I mean, I regarded that also as a minor when it comes to children having a passport. But it's stated in their submission that another issue is that of unaccompanied minors. It would be very difficult for unaccompanied minors to get access to a passport. If possible, just elaborate a little bit more on that.
Well, you've got a situation of unaccompanied minors, of children coming to South Africa. They're exceptionally vulnerable. They're probably escaping situations of violence or oppression in their home countries. And often many of them might not have the documentation in the first place. They might not have the adult supervision or guardianship to apply for those documentation, that document for them. And that because that is a legal process that would have to happen, it would be quite difficult for them to have access to those institutions to provide them with passports. And that's why, especially if they're unaccompanied, they don't have guardians or parents, they're coming to South Africa in a very vulnerable position. And that's why we're saying it's quite difficult for them to get hold of, apply for a passport or even have a passport when they arrive here.
Honourable Marcel.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's very much interesting to see your lifting of Section 39, which is not necessarily part of the amendment that we are dealing with. And obviously the reason is there too. One, that these people should not be deprived of an opportunity to be given training or any instruction, given the fact that they are illegal. But I want to understand from you, what is it that is so legal about giving an about giving a training or any form of instruction to a person that is an illegal migrant? What is legal about that? And secondly, remember here you have institutions of higher learning, for instance, that may find that, you may find that it's more prevalent there, as that is where most probably people would like to go. Now, if a particular institution is giving a training to people that are somehow find themselves in the country illegally, then are you then saying that those people should themselves recognize that they have to deal with these illegal people but legalize them without the recognition by government? I have a particular scenario now that I'm dealing with the UWC, where they are trying so hard to get their students legalized because they are in fact legal in nature, but their permits ought to be renewed. Now, they recognize that if they deal with those students who find themselves about to be illegal, then these students will effectively become illegal migrants. Now, by saying then we should try and loosen up the, then it will create problems. It will create the problems that the first presenter was raising, that we don't need these people here. But I don't think that is the approach that we should be talking about. Probably one should be making some other amendments or suggestions. Issues of moratorium, for instance. In this particular case, the person with the UWC, the registrar there says, I've got these students, please help me. It's an email which I received yesterday. They want to study. They've been living in South Africa. Some of them have been studying here. But the department is taking time to deal with their permitting. Now, I think that is an honest opinion that we should be encouraging to, you know, to each and every institution. And the best way to respond would be saying, can there be a moratorium whilst these people are busy applying until they are done and finished with their process of registrations, and then they can go individually and be processed, instead of saying, no, give them education? So that is my question to you, probably.
In terms of the section, change to Section 39 of the Principal Act we're asking for here, we talk about basic education. So the South African Schools Act and the Constitution grant people the right to basic education. We're talking about primary level education here. So that's, we want the Act to be changed for that. But when you're talking about higher education, the moratorium you're talking about, I think that would be something that would be good, because people shouldn't be prejudiced in terms of when they're studying, when they're trying to get education, if the department has held up the processing of their study permits or study visa. So that's that's definitely something that is important.
I don't see any more hands. I think we've come to the end of our presentation with COMSA. I'm not sure if PASOP is around. There is no indication that they are here. Maybe it will be better if we break for 15 minutes tea break and come back after 15 minutes. Trinity, Adam, help us with the people who are still outside. thank you, honorable members, Pastor Pizze, Mr. Hanekom is there with his entourage. We'll afford him the opportunity to make his presentation. Over to you, Mr. Hanekom.
Good morning, and I do apologize for coming in later. I thought I was on a 11 o'clock deadline, but it appears things went a bit faster. Sorry, Chair, and sorry, Portfolio Committee, and everyone else who's here. Firstly, we again welcome this opportunity to exercise our right as a democracy to question proposals of bill changes and to be involved in the management of this country and immigration policies and all policies. We also want to recognize and thank Scalabrini Center.
Mr. Anagon, can you please just wait? It's the presentation is number four. Number four in your files, honorable members. Okay, thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, we want to thank Scalabrini Center, the Solidarity Peace Trust, and Black Sash for endorsing our submission. And we'd also want to start off by saying we completely endorse and support the UCT Law Clinic submission, which we found particularly pointed and well-focused. We, as PASOP, examining the proposed bill, after reading very shallow content in regard to the... well, it became clear that a lot of it is intended to try intimidate or to try discourage immigrants from being in South Africa illegally. And we think that's a fundamental mistake. We believe that the only way to discourage migration is to encourage a more successful economy and more successful governance in the region. And we don't believe that the Immigration Act should aim to control migration, because migration is not controlled internally. It's a global phenomenon. We've seen in America that they've spent recently $500 million on border management and control, and the result has been tunnels are now dug underneath the border posts. So it's clearly proven, even by the most resourced and most technologically advanced countries in the world, that the only way to deal with migration is to look at foreign policy. And I think our very first concern was that it appears that the Act puts a lot of emphasis on strengthening punishments towards undocumented migrants, which we feel would not only fail to discourage immigrants from migrating, but we feel would also be a complete waste of resources in the current climate, where we know that our prisons are very full. And we do know that the conditions in some countries in this region, particularly Zimbabwe in 2008, is what I'm thinking of when I say this. But there were many Zimbabweans who would have much rather lived for a year in Baltimore than lived in Zimbabwe during 2008. So for that reason, we must realize that even the penalty of jail sentences and terms cannot be used to discourage people from migrating. And in terms of being undocumented, yes, we believe that people who are undocumented need to get documented, but we also believe that they need to be provided with the means, which is why in our submission we made reference to the fact that the department, when they announced the Zimbabwean Dispensation Project, or they also announced that they would be expanding that to the SADC region. So should we put in a penalty in legislation that would punish people for being undocumented while knowing that there's a policy decision that hasn't been implemented yet and might take even years to implement, it would be illogical to penalize Malawians, people from Lesotho, and other African countries which have provided South Africa with much, in fact, sometimes needed labor in certain sectors. So we do feel that that's a concern. With regard to Clause 5 and some other clauses, we feel it serves... we believe strongly that there's enough bureaucracy behind controlled migration as it is, and to add extra clauses that add additional requirements and demands, particularly considering Clause 5, which amends Section 9.3A, it serves no purpose other than to create more bureaucracy and more work for the department. We struggle to see the meaning behind it, adding that. We believe that the department has a lot of work at the border. We think that the proposal that adjudications or screening processes for asylum seekers at the border will create even more pressure on probably the most pressurized border post in the continent. We're thinking specifically about Bight Bridge, which has a huge amount of migrants going in and out, and to provide an additional screening process is going to add queues, add chaos, and when we add pressure onto the Department of Home Affairs, the inevitable result is human rights issues becoming less respected, and we also feel like corruption is more easily possible in a situation that is under a lot more pressure, and we fear that the aimed amendments there dealing with the screening process at the border would just add pressure. We think that taking the time frame down for migrants wanting asylum on transit asylum permits would be completely unreasonable. In fact, we believe the 14 days for somebody who's potentially traveled 3,000 kilometers on foot with no resources, facing many different strands of different illness in transit, are not necessarily in a state of being that they can easily just report to the refugee center and wait in the queues. And we're concerned that there was recently a cholera crisis in Zimbabwe. If somebody were to catch cholera in Bight Bridge on the way into South Africa, that would put them behind 5 days or a week, and that would then make it impossible for them to be legally in the country or to apply for asylum according to this act. It seems to be completely unnecessary, and it seems to add a lot of pressure. And in fact, I think the department would be able to confirm that the number of migrants who actually come through on this transit document are minimal, and the ones who do come, a lot of them are Somalis who cannot be deported anyway. So it just serves, in our opinion, as pointless, and would add a lot of pressure on existing systems. The proposed increased penalties, among them there was a part which we must be open, and I must be open and say, for anyone who's been misled at any point, I'm definitely not a lawyer, and we do depend on legal advice, and I haven't been advised on this, but I have received a message of support towards my concern from a lawyer who I respect quite a lot when he looked into it, but we never formally had legal advice on it. But it appears that the proposal of people who are assisting people in violation of the act in being in South Africa or for being in South Africa would actually put myself and other organizations in violation of the act, because we do believe that there are people here and there who may, through no reason of their own, be in violation of the act, and we want to continue to advocate for their rights to be respected and to look into them. And we don't feel like the addition that touches on the in fact, to be specific, it says the the text of anyone who knowingly assists a person to enter or remain or depart in, I mean, that the text has been replaced with anyone who knowingly assists a person to enter or remain or depart from the Republic in contravention of this act shall be guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment not exceeding 8 years. For us, this is a problem, because we have migrants in this country who need to be able to use and utilize the services of organizations like the UCT Law Clinic, Legal Resource Center, legal organizations, but also paralegal organizations whose role is to defend the rights of people who are most vulnerable, and we do believe that people in violation of this act through no means, through no deliberate malicious means, means are definitely vulnerable and are in need of assistance. And should that part go through, I feel like it definitely compromises our work and puts us in a very difficult situation. I think we actually welcome a part of the proposal that the proposed amendment, which I'm sure there will be quite a lot of resistance to, and that is the omission of the provision that allows for immigration practitioners, because we do feel like the existence of immigration practitioners does add a lot of pressure on systems that can be corrupted or individuals who can become corrupt. We do believe that it seems to be common knowledge in South Africa that for 10,000 rand you can get a work permit. We don't know why it's necessary to have an immigration practitioner as a middleman to this process, and we think that it actually only encourages corruption, and in fact the people who end up utilizing those services are sometimes organized criminals at a more advanced and dangerous level than the desperate person on the ground. We've been watching strip clubs being defended by immigration practitioners, and we're not certain of the facts, but we have been led to believe that in certain instances, strippers and people like that are here not because they want to be here, but because of some form of human trafficking. And the decision for immigration practitioners to defend those kind of clients is an indication that they are businesses. And in fact, even the coverage they get in the media for us, that appears to be a form of marketing for businesses, because they do operate at highly paid fees, and they're not human rights organizations. So we're always quite nervous engaging them, and we do believe that much like labor brokers, the debate now becomes should they be banned or should they be regulated, and it becomes a complicated debate. Our stance is to support the omission and to support the department's proposal on that, because it does make does place a grey area in the role that they play. We've seen certain department offices where immigration practitioners actually have offices in the same building as the department, creating some confusion between who's the department, who's the immigration practitioner. And even in their marketing, they do present themselves as being well connected and being able to provide people the visas or permits that they're wanting, which in itself we believe borderlines on corruption anyway. So we are nervous about that, and we do think that that petition, although it's likely to be strongly contested, and I suppose it's inevitable, there are some practitioners who are not are not corrupt and not so shady and do not support criminals, but and they also have their survival to defend, and it's inevitable that they will resist it. But from a human rights perspective, from where we're standing, we do believe that it does cloud the department, and it does cloud people, general public's engagement with the department, and does create quite a few loopholes for corruption. In terms of the the high jail sentence proposed, we actually are really concerned that that a move by the South African government to put in such or to support such an amendment that proposes much more stringent penalties, particularly at this time where it's not taking into consideration the current context, where there could be as many as the department may debate or might have different opinion on it, but there could be as many as at least 100,000 people who fall into the category that fails to adhere to the act, and that could be arrested tomorrow and sentenced for that jail term, which appears to be up to 5 years. That to us is actually creating a lot more pressure on the day-to-day lives of those immigrants who do need to get documented, but also on a South African government that's desperately trying to deter corruption. And when policemen already in Johannesburg, in particular, are accused of having literally termed immigrants ATM machines and been able to stop and demand documents and take bribes, adding to these penalties will only add more power to elements which are prone to being corrupted at certain points in time. We also think that the resources that would be spent are unreasonable. So if legislation is passed that's unreasonable, it's most unlikely that it would be followed. We also want to remind the committee and others that if somebody is guilty of fraud, then that's a different charge. So if somebody actually fakes a document, then they should be charged with fraud and can be charged and penalized for fraud, as opposed to failing to meet the requirements of the Act as such. So most of the people who would be subject to jail sentence or would be able to be subjected, because I guess our concern is that it's not practical, it's not going to be implemented, but it will be open to abuse by officials here and there. And we would want the legislation to be as close to the policies and to the day-to-day management of immigration and the rights of immigrants need to be considered when looking at such proposals. Honourable Chair, I think I've said a few points, and I again thank you all for the opportunity. I also appeal to you as a committee to ensure that our submissions are taken seriously and that you put as much pressure as you can where you feel we may be right and where you feel we may be wrong, that you follow your heart and that you make sure that there's no... Well, it takes good people to do nothing for evil to thrive, and we are concerned about parts of the Act, and we would like those who are compelled and feel strongly to ensure that they do what they can, because we really encourage that from the committee. We don't want to... We come here hoping that you take our views further, and then that's our appeal. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Ranipo. Are there questions from the member? Honourable Matu, followed by Honourable Baum.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. On a lighter note, I think the committee must stop because we are confronted with another Clause 5 moment. There is quite a difference between bureaucracy, rules, and regulations. Clause 5 is about regulations. The reason being submitted that it will serve no purpose because there is, in certain countries, single parents appear to struggle. Is this countries in the minimum, in the majority? Are these people in the majority? I'm also of the opinion, Chairperson, that there is rules when it comes to whether you divorce, whether you're single, that your children will be allocated to whoever. Perhaps if the presenter can just elaborate a little bit more on that, what is he meaning by that?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. My first question relates to the jail sentences and so on, or imprisonment that has been increased. Now, would you think that in all these instances that you wouldn't go along with these increases in sentences, or wouldn't you think that, for instance, if you look at 1B of 24, which deals with the matter as follows. It says, any illegal foreigner who fails to depart when so ordered by the Director General shall be guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment not exceeding 7 years. Now, that is clearly, it seems to me to be a one of the more serious contraventions of this Act, for instance. So wouldn't you agree that in some of these instances we do, in fact, need an increase in as far as the sentences is concerned? because that is clearly quite a serious contravention of the Act, the one I refer to, and some of the others as well. Secondly, wouldn't it then perhaps, I'm not suggesting that we will do that, but wouldn't it assist you with regard to your the problem you have with the amendment of Section 49 of the Act, if one would then specifically exclude certain practitioners, for instance, you know, that indicate that providing legal advice, paralegal advice, humanitarian aid, and so on, that would be acceptable and not covered by that particular provision, so that one then qualifies the provision in that sense. Wouldn't that assist you in some way? Thanks.
Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'm interested, and I'm sure Mr. Honeycomb can help us. The exchange visa that is being scrapped for the persons under the age of 25 years. There have been quite a few of the submissions that have expressed concern about that, including your own. Do you have any idea of the numbers? You make mention of the fact that foreigners who take up this visa, this opportunity, often work in less privileged communities. Do you have any idea of numbers locally or across the country? I'm interested in that. And Chair, Mr. Honeycomb spoke very passionately about Section 46 and immigration practitioners. He clearly feels very strongly about it. The way that we understand, and we'll develop a better understanding as we go along, obviously, but the way that we understand the repealing of Section 46 at the moment is that it will then allow anybody to assist. Currently, only immigration practitioners, advocates, and attorneys can assist with immigration practices. Repealing that says that anybody can assist. So it opens the whole field to unscrupulous practitioners. It will no longer be regulated by the Department of Home Affairs, so there is no regulation at all. In light of that interpretation, I mean, I understand you saying that, although I'm interested to know why it matters, that is higher-paying clients. The strip clubs, I'm only aware of one immigration lawyer who has been defending the strip clubs, but that's not for me to morally judge. But, yeah, Chair, our understanding is that it would open the field entirely. There would be no more regulation of who can assist with immigration practitioners or be a middleman or purport to be a middleman or whatever. In light of that understanding, I would appreciate Mr. Honeycomb's comments on that. Thank you, Chair.
May I respond, Mr. Honeycomb?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Firstly, before I get into the response to those questions, I think I may have made a mistake in my presentation. Our priority and the most important part of our submission is that we don't want the transit asylum document to be reduced to only 5 days from the 14. In fact, we'd want it to be extended to 28 days, providing reasonable time to get to there. And we're not wanting the jail sentence for either myself and my colleagues and those who and the impoverished communities who some of whom have failed through very little reason of their own to document themselves. That's the priority and that's the most important part of the submission. But I will respond, of course, to the questions, but I feel I may have emphasized a lot on the issues which are not the more relevant parts to our submission. They are the maybe smaller issues. Smaller in terms of our mandate as an organization, not being less relevant to the people they affect. The first question, I think the suggestion made that there are countries which have their regulations in terms of divorces and custody of children, and that other countries do regulate and control the issuing of passports, and that most countries do provide children or are able to provide children with passports. We don't disagree. That is correct. Most countries do. And if necessary, and if the portfolio committee wants us to, or if the honourable member would like us to, we can try and get more information to him later on which countries are not so accommodating towards it. But our understanding is that that it doesn't stand to benefit South Africa at all to put in that legislation. And if that's the case, then we're not sure why it's being put in. I think that's our reservation. And there are instances where people might lose out, and there are instances where even, for argument's sake, even tourists who would be wanting to come here might be less willing to come here if they now need to source a passport for a two-year-old child when they are probably already in their parents' passport. It seems to me as a bit of an unnecessary addition. But you're correct, Honourable Member, that definitely the majority of countries do seem to accommodate and do have their processes, but there are some which we believe don't. The second question about, I mean, I think the suggestion of adding the providing of humanitarian assistance, paralegal advice or advice, I think that would definitely go a long way towards dealing with our reservations. Although we would still be a bit concerned for extended family members who might be providing a spare room for such a client to stay on, and individuals who might not so easily be defended under that. But definitely that would really go a long way, and we would encourage the committee to consider adding humanitarian assistance. That it excludes people providing humanitarian assistance, paralegal advice, or legal advice so as to protect us. In terms of the jail sentences, if people have been directed by the Director General to leave the country and have failed to adhere, indeed that does make it more serious than somebody who is undocumented and hasn't been able to get their documentation. However, we are aware that a lot of failed applicants for asylum who get rejected and get rejected by the Standing Committee and end up undocumented as rejected applicants for asylum often are guilty of deciding to try to stay here longer to work and to live here, which I don't see as serious and deliberate and offensive as undermining the Director General. But when they are rejected, they are given a document which I understand as being a directive from the Director General that they should leave the country. Should those people be jailed for up to 5 years, Honourable Members, I think that's very harsh punishment. And I think the original provision, there was up to a three-month jail sentence provided for, which would maybe be reasonable in certain instances should it be proven that there's been deliberate negligence and deliberate attempts to undermine the department and the country's laws of immigration, that is. Honourable Member Lovemore, I think you do raise a pertinent point, and I do apologize for generalizing and saying that all practitioners represent these criminals in this strip clubs. That's not what I meant to do. I made a mistake. I apologize for that. But there are some practitioners who are guilty of taking on the highest paid clients, and I think part of the reason the department was pushing for this, from what I understand and from my knowledge of the issue from an outsider's perspective, has been that some of the more organized criminals, more organized syndicates, tend to have the money and resources to get services from practitioners, and they tend to be defended despite the morality, and the department ends up spending a lot more of its resources and time trying to deal with these criminals because of the defense that's provided for them. In terms of whether that now means anybody can represent them, I should sincerely hope that wasn't the intention of the bill. And I think the department would be in a best position, or those who proposed the amendment would be in a better position to discuss that. And then comes the next question as to whether it should be specifically stated in the bill who can and can't be an immigration practitioner. It's also, I suppose, important to recognize that among the practitioners there are some people who are fully qualified lawyers and maybe are in a better position to be providing a service like that than people who are not even qualified in any capacity. I mean, I myself am not a lawyer, but I could quite easily start an immigration practitioner practice and earn myself a very big salary by being this middleman. So you're right, if the provision being withdrawn leads to a more open gates scenario, then that would have, I think, failed dismally in regulating the conduct of such people. But we do believe that the very, because our concern is just based around the integrity of the nation, where people coming to South Africa or wanting visas are solicited by immigration practitioners on websites with very attractive adverts, and these practitioners present themselves as being absolutely in a position to guarantee you will get your passport, I mean your work permit or this or that, and it's questionable as to how they can definitely guarantee that. And it's also quite frequent that such practitioners have been people who were previously employed by the department. After leaving the department, they saw opportunity as practitioners, and for us, those kind of links create, I think, a scenario where their very existence presents supports the concept of a corrupt home affairs, and even their day-to-day engagements. What is their relationship between the people who are deciding whether or not to accept a permit? It's questionable in certain cases, and sometimes it isn't so questionable, but when we speak to people who've been clients of theirs, they've been told by the practitioner that they're very good friends with the department, and that's how they will organize the documents. So we are concerned about that. Honorable Chair, I think I've responded to the questions that have been raised.
Honorable Lovemore.
Chair, just the deletion of the exchange visa. I'm just interested if Mr. Harnacombe has numbers. And Chair, may I just add another question? In the recent presentation by the new deputy minister of Home Affairs in Windhoek, she made substantial reference, and this has been done before by others, but she made substantial reference to people, asylum seekers, fleeing their country, for instance, from DRC, fleeing their countries. If they are fleeing because they fear persecution or because they have suffered persecution, etc., that they should seek asylum in the first safe country they reach. Mr. Honnacle made reference to people traveling many thousands of miles, and I know that there are many. But this was a clear directive from the Ministry of Home Affairs that this is the way that they wish to move. I mean, I know we have no policy, so we're speaking speculatively at this stage, other than that it was a speech by the Deputy Minister. And I'm interested just in Mr. Honnacombe's thoughts on that. So you wouldn't have people from DRC, for instance, coming to South Africa. They would have to seek refuge in the first safe country they reach outside of the country where they are persecuted. Would that affect the 5 days asylum seeking? I know it's a complex subject, so it's difficult to put it in a few words, but I'm interested in your thoughts. And thank you.
Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member. I think firstly, our reservation about the exchange visa is based on our assumption from our observation from our numerous engagements with different organisations and even being a citizen and resident here in the Western Cape, that the vast majority of people doing these exchange programmes are involved in more cultural activities and involved in more work in less privileged communities. Some of them But I think that the loss for South Africans would be you have this vibrant group of youth who come here, and it seems also to be some kind of arrangement, like I've met Argentinians here and people from countries that South Africa has been able to say, look, we have an exchange system with them, and it's been, I think, good in many levels for integration culturally and for, I mean, I think after the World Cup, the biggest achievement the World Cup created was that ordinary South Africans, even in our townships, see that South Africa is a country that people want to come to and see that we can perform on a global level, and it adds confidence to our youth and our people to engage people from all around the world and to have that exposure. I think that's our reservation there. Responding to the five-day visa, I think if somebody's walked 300 kilometers from Mashingo to the border, has been malnutritioned and has caught cholera on the way, I don't think they're in any better situation than as if they had traveled an additional 10,000 kilometers, for argument's sake. The human suffering of cholera or any disease can put you back easily a week, and if we talk of 5 days, 5 days is a very short time. And to be honest, if we, when we're sitting in these nice rooms in our collars, decide to put in such changes, they're not going to be adhered to, because it's not practical. If somebody gets sick, then they're not going to be able to go and report to the immigrant, and it creates more work for everybody, and it's unreasonable. It's on paper, it's okay, but in practice, you know, 5 days is a short time if somebody falls ill in the process. So we think it's not so useful. When you mentioned people coming through other African countries, I think that's something I would strongly recommend, and I would strongly encourage, particularly considering the Honourable Minister was previously involved in foreign affairs or regional integration. I think that the problem of Congolese still further migrating is not one that's created or solved by immigration policy. I think, again, even this portfolio committee should try and engage the foreign department, foreign affairs department, or excuse my ignorance, is it regional integration, international relations, in terms of their policies, because I personally don't understand how a country like Zimbabwe, which is, in all honesty, smaller than the Western Cape, is able to still have a refugee camp system when we have so many Zimbabweans in South Africa seeking asylum, wanting the right to live and work and integrate. But a country like Zimbabwe still has a refugee camp, and Congolese and Somalis are not allowed to work and live in communities. So for us, we believe that as a country, we need to start looking at the issue as a whole. We can't try to deal with migration through immigration policy. That would be unsuccessful. And in terms of people coming through these other countries to come here, I think that's a debate that will probably go on for a year or two or more to come. But we're strongly of the opinion that anybody who comes to South Africa, stays in an impoverished community, works a menial job, particularly with our unfortunate recent incidents of violence against foreign nationals, is not doing so because of a great opportunity that's provided to them or great want to take advantage of South Africa, but there must be something wrong with where they're coming from, even if it's coming from Zimbabwe to South Africa as a Congolese person or as a Somali. It's still migration, and we still see it as forced migration. So I think that's a bit of a response to the issue you raised. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hanukom. And Mr. We don't have any more hands. We want to thank our presenters who came in today to make a presentation. We really thank you for your time. And honorable members, according to our program, we've come to the end of presentations today. I'm not sure from the members of the public if maybe there's a person who may or who's ready to make his or her presentation, because